Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You are about to listen to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring. This week it is sponsored by me, Richard Herring. I am promoting my tour, The Lord of the Dance Settee. It's a hilarious stand-up show. We've got loads of 4-star reviews in Edinburgh and is touring the country between October, which is probably gone by the time you've listened to this, and May 2015. Go to richardherring.com/LOTDS, lotsters. /tour, and you can find all about where I'm coming and buy tickets. Please do come and see that. It's the tour show that helps me keep going with all of this free stuff. But let us now listen to some of that free stuff. It is me talking with the wonderful Sarah Pascoe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. It's been over a week since he did that half mouth, and yet he's still stiff. I don't understand. What's happened with you? Please welcome Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Love to see you all. You're much better than last week's audience. In the quite a lot of last week's audience have left. Welcome to. We kept all the rest hidden, locked inside. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the very cool people have started to call it, Rehellastaba. Oh, fuck me. There's nothing cooler than a man yelling Rehellastaba at the top of his voice. We've got some of the usual suspects here in the front, nearly all the usual suspects. I'm not sure about that. Do I know this guy so well? Hello. You were here last week. Did I talk to you last week? Because, yeah. Did I say that you've got a face like one of the characters from the game Guess Who? Did I say that? Because, yeah, I have got a very neat bit. Has he got a beard? Yes. Okay, so we'll go into the second row where there's some likely-looking lads at the second row here. What's your name, sir? Anthony, is this what is passes for fashion nowadays in, for the young people? A hat on, a hat, a T-shirt with dinosaurs. Is there dinosaurs on it? Are they all different dinosaurs? That you're not a cool person, are you? I thought from a distance it looked like it was marijuana leaves. I thought, oh, he takes drugs, he's cool. But it's a man with dinosaurs. You are the 21st century Ross from Friends. That is what we go. What's your name? Anthony. Yeah, sorry, you did tell me that. I ran a half marathon 8 days ago. What is this? What do you? Are you a paleontologist? Yes. and you like to come out wearing... Because, you know, I come out wearing just red noses all over my T-shirt. What do you do for a living? They wouldn't let you into the paleontology department looking like that. What, do you have a job? Do you even have a job? Sorry, what? I've gone a bit aggressive. Sorry, I've gone a bit aggressive with like an old... What are you doing in my front garden? Get out of here! What, you're freelance? Sound engineering. How'd you find the sound here at the... Bit off. It's a bit off, George. George doesn't do the live sound. It's a bit off at the back. That's what George, who does the sound, was saying. He got a review on iTunes. Was it on iTunes? Netflix. Because someone said that they liked the sound on one of my DVDs. He's very pleased with himself. And what's your friend's name? What's your friend or lover?
Lover.
Andrew. That's nice. You look so free. You're so free. No, I'm picturing the two of you together now, and I like it. What do you do? In fact, I'm getting you involved in a minute. You're like Rowan Atkinson. You're watching in the corner. That's what he does, right? Yeah, we all know about him. Do you work in the sound? I'm really hoping, because there's three of you, one of you's going to, I work in sound, I work in sight, and I work in speech. And then we can do the three monkeys with their hands over there. Oh, again, I thought that was much cleverer than the audience. There it is. I thought that was genius. What do you do? You're a mechanic. That's good. What, like in with cars and stuff? Yeah. Could be other kind of mechanics. I scraped the underside of my car on a paving slab the other day. Anything you can do for me to help with that? Write off. What happened in Edinburgh? I've been driving around quite you're not very good. And what's the third monkey? The third monkey with his hands over his balls. What's your name?
Jack.
Jack. It seemed like Jack, though. So it is Jack, though, right? Jack. You're just very posh. You're really posh, or you've got a speech impediment on your own name. Jack. Can I call you Jack? Yeah, okay. What do you do, Jack? You work in a shop. Is it like Prince Charles's shop with all his farm produce? What shop is it?
It's called Your Store.
Your Store? Is it my store? Where is it? Where's Your Store? Is it like a what? It sounds like a chain. I've never heard of that.
No, it's new.
It's a new chain.
It's a concession in Top Man and Top Shop.
Oh, it's in Top Man. Yeah, they get a discount on the clothes, is that, yeah. You are the worst dressed out of all three of us. What are you charging in your lap there as well? What's going on? You've got like a massive battery and are you charging, what are you doing down there? It's like you've got like a bomb down there. He's the underpants bomber, but he's wearing a bomb outside of his underpants. Doesn't want to spoil his underpants. I think I'm doing a great job in my head. So that is the main thing. And what we're going to do with that is after the show, we're just going to dub in loads of laughs over all the things I said there. And I will look really good. Before I do fall asleep, it's incredible that I'm still standing. It's incredible that I'm still alive. I did say the other day, I kind of hoped I would die doing the half marathon because you make lots more. I've only made about 800 quid on sponsorship. If I died, it could be up to a million by now. You know, in a way, it's selfish of me to have stayed. And I think of all the money Scope could have done with that money if I'd just died on the run. But oh no, Richard Herring, you had to stay alive, didn't you? Okay, fucking this audience hates me. My wife's only 13 years younger than me, not Steve Coogan's girlfriend's like 24 or something. Have a go at him. It's all right, he's gone now. We've got the tape. Will you please welcome... Oh, no, I'm on... It's all falling apart. I'm on Jenny Eclair's page. I was going to introduce her as Jenny Eclair. That would be terrible. It's podcast 51. Will you please welcome a woman who's best known as playing the general public in Hello Panda. That's why we're all here tonight. Will you please welcome Sarah Pascoe, ladies and gentlemen. Sarah Pascoe. Sarah Pascoe. Come on in. How are you doing? She's got Snoopy's on her T-shirt. That's cool. That's more of a dress.
I got this dress heavily on sale, right?
Did you?
I saved £180. It was £210 in Urban Outfitters, and I got it for £30. And on the way here, I was saying to my boyfriend, I got this dress for £30. And he was like, that's all it's worth. Why are you bragging about that?
So tell us about Hello Panda.
Hello Panda.
You were right. The general public in
it. I was an extra, a supporting artist, they call them. So do you know Carriad Lloyd?
Yes.
So Carriad Lloyd is my best friend from university, and her husband, Ben Blaine, is a filmmaker, and he made a short film, which was then picked up by Channel 4, it's not Film 4,
okay,
for funding, and I was in the background. And I got chatted up by Neil Edmund. Do you know Neil Edmund?
I do know Neil Edmund.
So my only thing was to be on a stool and not laugh while he chatted me up.
Oh, see. You got chatted up in the film by it. I thought you were just going to go, while I was backstage.
Also, backstage. Chatted up by Neil Edmund. Do you know him? What a player.
Is he in the thick of it? Is that where people will know him from? Or is he not? No,
I don't know. He's in lots of things. He wrote that wonderful sitcom on BBC Two with Emma Fryer, Home Time.
Yeah. No one knows who he is. I know who he is, though.
You'd recognise him. He's in lots of things.
And who played the panda?
Benedict Wong.
Wow, okay. So there was someone, a man dressed up as a panda. Yeah. Who said hello to the panda?
No, so a different man was dressed up as the panda.
Okay.
The man who, he'd been in Gorillas in the Mist, he was the most famous person on set, was the guy who was inside the panda.
Okay.
And Ben...
And when you say that,
but it's a film about Neil Edmund trying to get semen from a panda.
Okay,
that's what
it sounds like, Mike. I'm definitely going to watch. You know, I don't do much research. I just look on IMDb. But now I'm going to watch that one. That is that's pretty good. Now the main thing I want to talk to you about, is that your dad was the vocalist with Flintlock.
Yeah.
Which most people won't know. They won't know what I'm talking about.
The thing is, even at the time, they weren't that big a band.
They were massive.
They were massive.
The guy was in the Tomorrow People.
Yes, Mike Holloway was in the Tomorrow People. Yes.
The original Tomorrow People, which was my favourite TV show. John from the Tomorrow People, who remembers him?
No one.
So, do you remember the bloke who was in some of the... He came in Tomorrow People quite late. He wasn't in the original series. It's not looking good. My dad was in a band with that guy and was in the Tomorrow People.
One episode of the Tomorrow People. Yeah. So the thing about my dad, my dad was in a band when he was 17. He left it when he was 19. He grew up in Dagenham. He was very sad being in the band and they didn't have any kind of chart success. So now, though, it says on my Wikipedia, Sarah Pascoe's dad was Derek Pascoe from Flintlock. And people go, so were you a millionaire? did you have one of those sheltered lives and that's why you're a comedian now?
Well, but also your great-grandma was a Rosa Newmarsh.
Did you just look at my Wikipedia page?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's how I start.
You've met me and we've done gigs together.
No, that's where we start.
Yeah, so Rosa Newmarsh. So she's really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
So she's my great-great-grandmother. Her husband was very ill in a time where women couldn't really earn money and you couldn't have property or anything like that. So her husband's very ill. She had to do something to raise money. So she brought over Russian composers from Russia, and that was the beginning of BBC Proms. So her letters have been sold at Sotheby's or to Tchaikovsky and people like that, and she's got a prize in her name at one of the music schools for £100.
It's not bad. Not many 19th century people on Wikipedia, and she's got her own entry.
Yeah.
Do you think she ever met Rasputin, and do you think she had sex with him? And
Rasputin.
Do you think that... I am obsessed with Rasputin, and do you think you're related to Rasputin,
it's the big expose.
Yeah.
Yes, she did have sex with Rasputin.
Definitely.
I was up in the loft one day, and I came across a chest, and it said, "Do not open," in Russian. And I opened it, and it was all of the pictures that they'd drawn of each other. This is back before sexting. So if you wanted to send Rasputin a sexy picture, you had to draw it yourself and then send it by carrier pigeon, which is what she did. And yes, I'm 1/8 Rasputin.
I feel that you are mocking me. Because I like Rasputin, and she was in St. Petersburg in the 1910s, so she might have seen him walking around. He liked running around. No one else is interested in Rasputin as I am. Okay, we'll do it now. We'll get out of the way. I always worry with female guests about going to dirty Brit confessions.
Oh, so
Brit
treat men and women differently?
Well, I just worry. Oh, I only worry about it. I don't treat them any differently. It's just the only difference is I don't care with the blokes. But a lot of the things that come up on there towards women aren't as amusing.
Oh, I see.
That's all I'm worried about.
Okay.
They're just a bit more graphic. But yours aren't. Yours are all right. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, that the people who fancy you are quite lyrically amusing.
I wrote a lot of them myself. This is something comedians do. Comedians do this in groups sometimes, looking at each other's on this. So you have to make sure you've got some.
Yeah. I haven't had one for ages. I kind of assumed people would start keep putting them up just to get read out on my podcast, but they don't. It's too far to go. Even that, even to pretend to imagine having a fantasy about me is too much. Okay, this one. I would actually listen to both a Nickelback and a Calling album 10 times over if it for some reason meant I could have a night with Sarah Pascoe.
I would love it if that was the code. Against my will, if someone ever listens to a Nickelback album 10 times, I just materialise. What did you do?
I mean, even if you don't like Nickelback, that doesn't seem like that many times. It doesn't like, oh no, I've had to listen to Nickelback 10 times, so I get to have sex with Sarah Pascoe. It just seems slightly insulting to me.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, I took it as a huge compliment.
Should be something harder than that. I'm prepared to spend, like, 6 hours of my time listening to some records I don't like.
Oh.
Okay. It's not that good, is it?
What I'm getting from this is that you might like Nickelback.
I don't like... I don't even know who the Calling are. That's how...
Do I?
Do you know the
Calling? Do you know who the Calling are?
Don't worry about it. Are they better or worse than Nickelback? They're better, but some people say worse. Is anything worse than Nickelback? I don't... Similar. That's the guy who put the thing on the Brit Comedy Fashions, clearly. Sarah Pascoe's eyes make me wet. Which sort of suggests to me, like, that they're just sitting underneath you and you're crying. Is that... Have you used...
I cry on people.
Yeah. So, and this is, I think, again, this is I'm imagining that's a woman, because I don't think many men would say...
It's not
if you ejaculate in your own trousers, technically you have become wet. I have never done that. I met Sarah Pascoe once. It's just weirdly written. Now, I thought she was gorgeous on telly, but in person, she is 1 and then 17 noughts times more beautiful than I could ever comprehend a human to be.
I know, that makes me worry they didn't meet me. They met Kylie Minogue.
If we both swung that way, she could have taken me right there all night long.
Woo!
How
do they know I don't swing that way?
I don't know. Well, I presume they know that they don't swing that way.
That's and yet they find you
like a trillion billion times more beautiful than any other person they could imagine, even. They comprehend. That's kind of insane to think.
It is insane.
Yeah.
You're nice. Do you think these people are kind of hyperbolic about everyone? Or do you think they do pick one person like them? What do you think?
I think they mainly. I think the one who talked about Santa Claus, I think, is the same one.
Yeah.
Who wants Steve Keegan's penis in a ribbon and... I can't remember who the other one was now. But no, I think they are very... I think they're very sincere. And are hoping their dreams will come true. And I'm hoping, as a sort of 21st century Jim will fix it, I'm hoping I can make those.
And also, as a woman in her 30s with low self-esteem, I only ever want to sleep with these people now.
That's pretty nice to someone. I mean, it's sort of weird. 1 and 17 noughts times more beautiful than I could ever comprehend a human to be. It sort of sounds like they might not be human themselves.
You think a puppy wrote it?
Maybe it was an alien of some kind.
Yeah, could be.
I never thought I would find a human attractive.
They haven't got enough heads. Yeah.
But also, it doesn't say how little they comprehended a human. Because if they thought like the most attractive a human could be is 0.00000000001%, then you're just 1%.
Yeah. So that's still better than all other humans, Richard. I'm still taking compliments.
You're still top of the human. Great. So let's go into an emergency question. I asked foolishly, just threw away a brilliant... it was a terrible emergency question. You're going to have to subscribe for them. I asked the asparagus wee one backstage because I thought, I can chuck that away. Nothing ever good comes out of that answer. You would not... I'm literally going to go on Facebook and put, I asked this woman about whether a wee smells of asparagus. You will not believe what happened next.
And you will click on that and be disappointed.
As you are with all of those things. No, I think there would be, my audience would be amazed. So you're going to have to subscribe for £1 a month to hear that answer. What a shame. Let's ask the new emergency question to you. Would you rather, if you had to choose between dating I'm going to say, I asked it to Coogan in a slightly ruder way, but the date would end in full sexual intercourse.
So for me it's more romantic.
Yeah, there's some romance. It's usually dating.
So I have to be seen in public with this thing.
Yeah, that's true. Would you rather date a man, as I think you know, who was a 6 foot penis, but
I have dated a 6 foot penis. Yeah, 6 foot seven, in fact.
Was it Stephen Merchant? I mean, it's quite, there aren't many of them around, but most of them have been on here. I can give you like two.
Greg Davis is 6 foot seven as well, also
okay.
Not here.
Okay,
also
good. I was going to go on to Greg next, so to speak. If it was a man who was a penis, but he's 6 foot tall, he's got a face, the penis has a face and a mouth, so
okay.
You know, you can kiss the penis.
Oh, lucky me.
And it will kiss you back.
All right.
And it's like a, you know, and it'll talk. And
Richard, what are the downsides to this scenario?
And it's a really massive penis. I mean, just too impractically big. Mm-hmm. Or a man who is a normal man, but instead of a penis, he has a tiny man in his trousers that will...
That has a mouth and a face.
Yeah,
can that little man talk?
He can, yeah. He has his own personality. They're not really connected in any way apart from the obvious.
Yeah, that guy with the tiny man.
Yeah, everyone's gone for that. No one has yet gone for the gigantic, gigantic
okay, Richard,
penis.
Seriously, what am I supposed to do with that guy?
Have a chat with him, see how you get on, see what he's... Don't just judge him because he looks... You're like in the film The Elephant Man, all the people who just go, ah, The Elephant Man. What about The Penis
okay,
Man?
Okay, if there were three choices and one of them was The Elephant Man, yeah. I would have chosen The Elephant Man. What are you supposed to do with a 6 foot penis man?
Talk to him.
Talk to him. And what kind of life has he had? What kind of shared experiences do we have?
I don't think you've got many shared experiences. That's what makes him such an interesting date. You can go... I mean, how? At what point, if you were... I knew you'd chosen the other one, but if you were dating him,
okay.
At what point would you bring up the fact that he was a 6 foot penis? Would you mention it in the date?
No, he would know already, having lived his entire life. Yeah. I presume he's going to be around the same age as me. He's been like in his mid-30s.
Yeah.
And so he knows he's a giant penis. As we've walked to the restaurant, people have shouted from the other side of the street and out of cars, oh, you're a dick. Literally, mate, like an actual... like that. So, and he's just a pretend. He puts his like collar up on his coat and then goes, oh, so where did you go to school? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, did you have a nice time at school? No, everyone kept making fun of it. Back then I was a small penis, but in school uniform. He's going to have had a terrible life. Also, do I want to have children with somebody? And let's face it, that's why we're having dates in the first place. I'm 33 years old.
Yeah.
Where is this going? And are your genes going to mean I have a baby penis come out of me? And then I have to have pictures taken with it and introduce it to my family at Christmas. No, I mean, it's going to have the same miserable life as you. No, thank you. Oh, you've just got a little man on you. Let's have a chat.
That is quite a good answer, Greg. I will give you that. It feels... Feels to me like you've been asked that before.
I spent my entire life thinking, what would I do?
What would you choose? Were you ever rude to any celebrities when you were young? When you first met Pete, did you?
Meeting celebrities is very odd. I don't know. I mean, you may be more used to it than I do because you react in a way, your body reacts in a way as in this person is familiar to you already. I know this person, and you don't. I worked on stage door at Wimbledon Theatre once for about 4 months, and I never got used to the fact that celebrities came into... David Tennant came in to visit Richard Griffiths, for instance, or Martin Clunes came in once, and you react, you want to say hello, and you can't. And then so you just, instead you go bright red, and they know why you're going red, and you go, oh, sorry, I'll just call for him now. What's your name? Like knowing that you both know exactly who they are, and people are so like nice, but it must be very difficult for people. I used to when I was because of how my mum and dad met, actually. So my dad was in a pop band, and my mum used to stalk him, and she used to sleep outside of his house, and she eventually waited till he wasn't in that band anymore and got with him. She waited out all of the fans, and so I thought that was how you got a boyfriend, and I picked Robbie Williams as my person. Right. And so when he left Take That, he came to London, and me and Cheryl, my sister, ran away to meet him, and we slept outside the Big Breakfast in Stratford. He was guest presenting to meet him, and this is an interesting aside, but I then, when I was 19, accepted a job working with his dad, because I thought, his dad's a singer, and I thought, if I work with him, I'm definitely going to meet Robbie Williams. And my obsession in my brain was always that I would bring him back down to earth, because I could really see his insecurity and how he doesn't want to be shouted at that people love him all the time. He just wants to be made beans on toast and understood. And so I was really sure that I'd be that person, that I'd be so blasé with it. So I worked with Robbie Williams' dad. This is in 2001. And last week, it's on tonight. This is a side, but it won't be when your podcast is out. It would have been already been on. I did Nevermind the Buzzcocks. And it got to the lineup round, and they went, Sarah, go and stand in the lineup. And I was like, what? And they made me put on a T-shirt saying, I am Sarah Pascoe, with all these other blonde girls. And then they brought out Robbie Williams, his dad. And he sat in my chair and had to try and remember which one I was. With the whole introduction of, she worked with you to try and meet your son, did you know? And he was like, I had no idea.
And did he recognise you?
He'd been watching the record.
No idea. So that helped.
So he faked it.
Okay. And did you meet Robbie Williams?
No.
You didn't even meet
but
him?
I'm glad I didn't now. Because imagine if I had met him and he hadn't fallen in love with me. Now, yeah. The lie I can tell myself is he met his current wife and she sounds amazing. And I would not want to get in the way of that with our true love.
Have you seen the film Sliding Doors? It's a really good film.
Yes. I have seen Sliding Doors.
It's because if different things happen, different things would then happen afterwards.
Hey, there's a whole knock-on effect.
It is.
Every time we get on public transport, guys. Yeah.
Or near any sliding door, or just doing anything. It's not just about sliding doors.
And that's what's not fair, is that there should have been other doors in that film, because there are other kinds of doors, revolving doors.
Yeah, there are.
If that's broken, and you have to walk through a different static door, that's wasted 2 seconds of your time. Yeah. Oh, different life.
Or sometimes,
what could have happened if you'd gone straight through?
Or you get in a revolving door and accidentally revolve round.
You're already outside the building.
You have to go back in again.
Or you've already met a guy who was outside who you would have missed because you would have been signing in at reception. Hey, do you want to write a film?
Yeah, I do. I've got quite... Can we call it Revolving Door?
Can we call it different kinds of doors?
Yeah, different kinds of doors and the impact they have on different future events, depending on how and when you enter them.
And the poster. And hey, guys, stop laughing. This is really good. Also, the poster should be an advent calendar and on the tube. And then people can open the doors and see who's behind there.
Yeah?
Christmas, no. Christmas 2016.
What if they open the door and there's chocolates in there? That would be good.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking from my own point of view.
You would like a little chocolate.
Some free chocolate.
Would you eat a tube? A chocolate you found on a poster on the tube?
Yes. I would trust it. If it was advertised in the film, different kinds of doors that entered in different ways and lead to different future events.
But exactly. What a murderer would do, a murderer would see that advertising campaign and go, I'm going to put poison chocolates in there.
Yeah.
And then you come along, someone's already eaten the genuine chocolate and you've got the poisoned one out, now you're dead.
But then that's a new film in itself, isn't it?
That's a sequel.
The thing with sliding doors, I can't believe there was only one of them. That's why Peter Howitt from Bread, he just rested on his laurels, thought, yep, done that. Just do a film about a different thing happening from the original sliding door. She misses that tube and then gets on a different tube. It's all about the girl. What people don't realise about sliding doors, the actual thing that changes history is the girl on the stairs on the way to the tube. There's a girl on the stairs, and Gwyneth Paltrow is running down the stairs, and in one reality, the girl gets in a way, and the other reality, the mum pulls the daughter out of the way.
Yeah.
So that film should be called Little Girl.
Little Girl.
moving Little Girl.
Moving.
Little Girl who moves. I mean, you get a lot of DVD sales for different reasons. Very funny, aren't you, youngsters, coming here with your proper jokes? Sorry, I'm just pretending I'm a Mock the Week.
Have you ever done Mock the Week?
I haven't. I've never been. I was thinking...
Would you like to do it?
I don't know if I would like to do Mock... When I saw... I was talking backstage about the... Which I talked with James Acaster last week about the Mock the Week that they did recently with quite a lot of younger comedians in it, which did feel like a different vibe going on and improved it. I don't really like it as a programme, but mainly from the past when it was much more gladiatorial.
See,
and stupid.
I had it in my head right from beginning of starting off being a stand-up, and realised I wanted to be a stand-up, that I wanted to be on that show.
Right.
So there are some comics who look at it and think, oh, I didn't want to do it, whereas I'm the kind of comic that you wouldn't think would do very well on it, and that is why I wanted to do it. I think I really had a chip on my shoulder. I wanted to prove that you could not make... that you could be good and entertaining, but also good-hearted and not making jokes about victims or easy jokes about weak people, or I'll never talk about people's appearances, I'll never call fat people fat or old people old, or denigrate a politician by what they look like. And I had such a strong ambition to be on there and go, see, it's okay, you don't have to be like this. Whereas some programmes, they have a strict formula of how they're made.
Yeah.
And they will only stay alive if they allow different comedians in, like James Acaster, who's so brilliant, and I'm sure you guys were very comedy savvy and you know, but him on that show, the producers were so shocked, as in, like, how is he so funny? It's like, because you haven't been to a gig for 15 years.
Yeah.
So you don't understand.
Well, what's quite interesting about all of those things, because all of those shows started about the same time as I started doing TV comedy, and they're all still there. And they're all, and even a lot of the new ones, they're all created and written... some of them are written
but we scripted this earlier. So.
We completely scripted it. I can't believe
you got your lines wrong on the sliding doors.
Yeah, I can't believe it. So you can't just remember the name of that film twice in a row without having learnt it very carefully. But it's the same guys, and they do operate to the same those formulas, so that's fine. But like even the guys who are the regulars on Mock the Week, from what I've seen, they come up with the same sort of formulaic jokes because they have to, because they do it
every week. I'm always really impressed by them. So people approach comedy in lots of different ways, and actually... they have to be so up on the news, and they also have to kind of maintain themselves as a character. But they have pages and pages and pages. And often a show that's between 22 minutes or 28 minutes is recorded for 3 hours. And in that time, the people who keep it going, quite often the guests, you pop up once every 15 minutes and say a thing. And in an edit, it looks like you talked. But they are just going through streams of stuff that they've prepared. And if someone like Dara or a host on a different show has a 20-minute riff that ends up being amazing, all of that stuff is thrown away.
Yeah,
but, and they consistently work on it, and it's a real craft. It's something to really respect, I think. Although I know other comedians maybe don't.
I think it's I don't not respect it. It shouldn't be the main thing that comedians end up doing on TV. I think,
but most comedians don't do it.
I know. Most of them don't do it, but it's the only avenue now. So again, when I started, those panel shows were on the side, and you would be able to do sketch shows or stand-up shows, and now it's like it's panel shows, and maybe occasionally one of those people will go and do a stand-up show out of that. So that seems unfair. I think that Mock the Week, it felt like, for someone who likes to do sort of the bantery stuff of playing off other people, it didn't seem ideal for me. But I haven't ever been asked to do it.
Yeah.
I haven't been asked to do most of them, because I was talking about podcasting to someone, to a journalist the other day, and I only ever even got on Have I Got News For You and Buzzcocks after I started podcasting. So for 20 years, I never got on those shows. I've never done Live at the Apollo. When you look at some of the shit that's been on there... I find it quite insulting that I've never even been asked. I was asked when it was Michael McIntyre. They said I could come and audition to be on Michael McIntyre's roadshow at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
It was on a Monday, so I couldn't do it.
So you didn't do it?
No.
Oh.
So on Monday I was doing this, so I couldn't do it. But also, fuck off.
Yeah.
And I've gigged with Michael McIntyre, so he could say whether I could do it or not. So whatever.
But it is an odd thing. So the people who make these kind of shows, as we all know, they do approach comedy like there is a formula, it's a science.
Yeah.
And quite often that is a kind of an algorithm of youth and new plus people that we trust and people that we represent. And it is always baffling. So you say that and I think, God, that's so weird that you haven't been on those kind of things. And so and obviously there must be some kind of resentment there or...
I don't know. I was sort of surprised that I eventually got kind of. I think maybe I would resent it in the 90s when I wasn't being. But then I was sort of surprised when I got invited on, and then it sort of very quickly stopped. I was on Have I Got News For You twice, thought I did okay. I was on Buzzcocks twice, thought I did okay. But there are so many people. I'd rather it was more people. I genuinely think, Mock the Week, you don't need the regular people there. Yeah. They can come in, they can be in there four times a series or something, but there's no need to have the regular. Just let's get shitloads of people on it. And as long as you have some people who've done, a few people who've done it once or twice, mm-hmm. the new people can... I think the first time you went on, it kind of felt like there was Gary Delaney was on. Yeah. It felt like quite a supportive
atmosphere. Yeah. So Gary, he was really, really helpful beforehand. The warning they tell you on Mock the Week is the audience don't know you, no one will laugh at you, but it's a TV programme, not a gig. So what you mustn't do is die inside if every time you speak it's tumbleweed. And you do, you have to go like... Like, and no one is laughing at you. And that was, so Gary was so kind, and obviously because he's married to Sarah, they're such a supportive kind of powerhouse. They want everyone to do well.
Yeah. No, well, that's not, it does feel, but that it sort of feels time, and even speaking as an older generation comedian, it feels time that you know, that it should move on to be the, because also there are so many new comedians coming through.
Yes.
I mean, just ridiculous numbers. So it's really hard to get a foothold and get anywhere.
Yeah, and there is a trickle down effect. I know lots of people complain about TV being the only way you get, but lots of the people who would be guesting on these kind of shows now still play gigs all up and down the country. We're not hugely touring. We're not taking ticket sales from other people. What we're doing is making kind of little local gigs, hopefully fill up 1 month so that people go back for the next 3 months. Hopefully it does kind of keep the industry flourishing in some ways.
Well, I think maybe, but I think you just need to do well on two or three of them, and I think it will have an effect. I mean, you've done the live at the Apollo as well, haven't you? And so, unlike me, I've actually done it twice.
30 years. I've actually done it twice, so I feel a little bit like I should have said, hey, maybe you should ask Richard Herring. The second time they called, like, guys, I've done this now.
I did the Russell Howard's Good News, that slot that they have for new comedians.
Get paid £1,000 for 15 minutes of material?
I can't remember.
But they... you not remember?
I can't remember.
Isn't that your production company? That your agents are...
It is my agent. Yeah. My agent's running. That's how I got the job. And I did... and I actually think Russell was like a fan of mine and Stu's. So I think it was actually Russell.
So he's still trying to give you a leg up.
Just saying, yeah. But that was one week, because I went on and it was all, you know, 16 or 17 year old girls and young men, and you know, and I went on and did my filthy stuff about you know, anal sex, and they were all kind of staring at me like,
people that old still have sex.
But I just, and they didn't, you know, they didn't get it. It was really nothing in the room, but I just did it. I just did it all to the camera and did it as if it was working well.
Yeah.
And then it looks really good.
Yeah.
So it's exactly.
There are some people who tell you, especially into like live at the Apollo style gigs, if you have an amazing gig, right, as in like the audience, you feel like you're flying, the audience clap after jokes, and you can't help it, your face goes smug. And because you have to wait for the clap. Those ones look awful on television. Because you're watching at home going, why are they clapping something about beds? Why are they clapping this? Why is this shit? But whereas actually, if you have quite a bad gig, so you keep your pace up, and it edits together and a big clap at the end that they've added on, and then you watch at home going, all right, okay, I see something going on there. So it's actually better. You want to have like a quite bad to mediocre gig.
That's why. That's why they should have me on. I can do that. So let's talk about sperm, because you've talked about sperm. Because I wrote this book, Talking Cock. I don't know if you've read it, but you can buy it from GoFasterStripe.com. You can have that one for free.
Can I?
Yeah.
Can I really?
Yeah, I can. Yeah,
can you sign it for me?
Yeah, of course. I'll draw a big cock on it. That's what
Thank
I do.
But
you talk about in your current show, you talk about the kamikaze sperm,
which
sperm always
selection.
Fascinated me. There's loads of really well, there's loads of fascinating stuff about the history of things, which I think I haven't seen your show, but my wife has talked to me about your show. I think there's lots of
your wife saw my show when I did it to six people on the day of the World Cup final, and that is a sign of a real friend.
She loved the show, but that is kind of it is interesting, this idea that within sperm, there are sperm that have evolved in order to kill the sperm of other men.
Yeah. So they didn't know for ages. So men had two kinds of sperm, kamikaze and egg getters. Kamikaze have got a shorter tail and they can't fertilise an egg. So they look like this byproduct. So they didn't understand what they did until in tests in labs, they mixed together semen from different men. And suddenly these kamikaze guys woke up and started attacking the other man's egg getters. And then this is where they realised that actually... there are hormones that a man can secrete that make his sperm more aggressive. And they form... If a man thinks that his partner is cheating or sleeping with other men, he releases this hormone, and his kamikaze ones can become like a ring around the cervix waiting for whoever comes. It's so amazing. And so obviously, this has gone on for millions of years. We've evolved from a kind of ape... But what's so interesting about sperm selection is that women, our female ancestors, used to have sex with lots of different men throughout the evening. And inside her, sperm fight, and the one that will create the healthiest child based on her DNA is the one that makes it to the egg. And all of the Victorians, people like Darwin, were Victorian. So all the first, all the Victorians were Darwin, which means that they were Victorian. Well, I mean, all the first anthropologists were Victorians, people like Darwin. So they ignored all of this because they didn't think that women were sexual. They thought that we were coy and that we were nurturing. And so now science is just finding out that actually, in terms of history, women have a whole dynamic sexuality that involves fancying lots of partners, not just being attached to one, which is the kind of current model. It's really interesting. Look it up on the internet.
But also in the 19th, it was really late that they realised that women had anything to do with the actual reproduction of the baby. So the idea, in the 19th century, they believed that men just planted their seed in the soil of a woman,
so
and a baby would grow out.
Aristotle came up with this first of all. He said women were soil that a man planted his seed in, and then the seed, and then so that only men were related to their children. Yeah. They didn't think it was anything to do with, which is why people like Henry VIII. So he kept having his wives killed because they couldn't have male children. Didn't realise that that was in the male sperm.
Same with Chris Eubank.
Chris Eubank. He had no idea, yeah. He had no control of that. So it's the male sperm that decides what gender
but
the child is.
But it's kind of insane that when, you know, you know that, oh, maybe in Greek times they thought this. In the 19th century, it wasn't until they looked and went, oh, there's an egg in there as well. They thought that there was an homunculus. They thought that a sperm was a little man.
Yeah.
That you would just plant and it would just grow into a man. Like, well, a baby, first of all. We're quite sort of Benjamin Button otherwise, isn't it? Which is not, that's not a nice birth. Giving birth to Benjamin Button.
Unless you really fancy Brad Pitt.
It'd be a bit like having a 6 foot penis in you, I suppose. It's kind of fascinating. It's as close as science gets to saying all women are whores, basically, the killer sperm. That is as close as it gets. It's going, we have to have these because all women are whores, so there has to be the killer sperm.
Well, women are definitely sexual, and I think that's something that any of us now would say, oh, that's so obvious. We have urges and horny periods and fantasies and this whole world going on, but actually, even like back to our parents' generation, that wasn't an acknowledged thing. And that's what's really scary, is when you go back even 50 years and realise, oh, wives were at home desperately sexually frustrated, never having had an orgasm with the man that they'd married. And then everyone going, she's hysterical, I wonder what's wrong with her. Fucking hell.
But it's also scary for everyone. It's the idea that men would be having that kind of sex with their wives as well, that wouldn't be...
But they were so repressed that they didn't know what to do, or they were too scared. Yeah. They would never look at their wife. Naked, all of that, all of the shame around it's really sad because it ruined people's lives.
Well, my wife has an amazing routine about the creation of vibrators, and which I can't go into. It's her routine. It's good, isn't it, though, Katie? It's interesting. It's interesting. It's an interesting routine. Check it out when she does her next show. I think that's the only time you're going to see it. I realised I was going to start doing that. So, Andy Moore, there's a lot of crossover between you and me. You are obsessed with, I've read an article about swimming lane etiquette annoying you, the etiquette of swimming lane. I am really fucking obsessed with this.
I don't drive. Do you drive?
I do drive.
Okay, so because I don't drive, I've never had that experience before of being very, very irritated by bad manners, by people, slight things that you can do that make everyone have a nice time. And and when you're swimming, all you want is just to be in the zone. You don't want to have to be always conscious of other people and their bodies. And so, it can be difficult. Why? What's your thing?
Well, I just hate people not obeying the rules of it and not working the slow, medium. Yeah. I've got so much. I could honestly do a whole podcast, I think I have done, about this. Yeah. But it's like, so if you're... you've got to judge it by the people in the pool, not by your belief of what your standard is.
So different areas, I don't know if you've had this. So if you have a gig outside of town, you might go to their swimming pool. And people have different speeds. So Colchester, where my mum lives, their fast lane is like, it's like Swiss cottages slow.
Yeah.
Swiss cottage,
that's what people
slow,
say.
It's Colchester's fast.
Colchester, essentially, the really lazy sperm in an ejaculation. They're all like those ones that are kind of have two heads. And...
Yeah. Had a laptop on there too long. Whereas Lewisham, where I live now, I'm a fast medium.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I'm not. I'm a Swiss cottage slow.
I'm slow, but you know. But sometimes I'll judge it. Sometimes it's all old ladies in there. Then I'm super fast.
I know, but this is the thing: is I feel really bad about it because when it's older people or overweight people, I know it's so great that they've gone swimming. It's so great they're all here, and I hate myself that I resent them for swimming wonky. And being in the
just
way.
Swim in the right. And I do it when there are arrows in the thing.
Yeah.
Obey the fucking arrow. It doesn't care if you're the only person in the lane. Obey the arrows.
Yeah, obey the arrows.
Because what if two people suddenly get in? I hate it when two people get in and there's arrows and the other person goes, should we just divide the lane into two? I'm no. No, we shall not.
Do you say something to them?
Yeah, I try to. I do it. I usually let them do it.
Yeah.
But there's.
but then I.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Can't swim because then I'm thinking as I'm backstroking down the wrong way up a thing, someone else is going to get in and not see me and swim into me, and that what kind of disaster will that be?
So I have found it's so much better. Like, so first of all, you get angry and then you have to stop yourself and then you stop and go, hey, can I take over you next time? Or hey, should we all go the same way round? And then it's fine.
Is it?
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Or my mum swims much more than me, and she. How bad is this? She will tell the lifeguard to tell them off. She'll be like, excuse me.
I've had that, though. I've had a lifeguard come and tell me off and make me move to the slow lane.
Yeah, I've had that.
When I am in the right lane, and like there was three people in the middle lane, there were like five people in the slow lane, and I was faster than all the people in the slow lane, but I was a bit slower than the two people in the middle lane, but I was still in the correct lane.
Suing purgatory.
I was still in the correct lane. Then she asked me to move down. I said, there's five people in the slow lane. That's insane. Get them people who are fast in the middle lane to move up to the more empty fast lane if you're going to do your job correctly.
Or get the people from the slow lane.
Don't come at me. I am... You don't know how much I think about this. I'm in the right lane. I've swum one length as well. It was like she'd... It wasn't like I'd done five lengths of people going... I'd done one length. She came out to me. Can you move to the slow lane? I was just... That was my warm-up length.
Did you say
I've just got going. You can't judge the speed yet. As it happened, it was quite a fast one. But you're not to know that. Mate, till I've done 10, do an average of
the
speed, working out.
She would have known
the
way that you breathed when your head came up. She would have known if you were like...
No, my head's always above the water, so that's a telling tale.
You don't put your head underneath. No. In the slow lane, mate. Yeah.
I can go pretty fast.
No, you can't.
I can. But if it's all really slow people in the slow lane, you've got to change.
I know, it's awful.
Well, we could talk about this. Let's talk about this for the rest of the podcast.
It's a philosophical dilemma. Would you rather be the fastest person in the slow lane or the slowest person in the medium lane? What would you rather be?
I would rather be correctly in the medium lane. Sometimes the fastest person in the medium lane is the slowest person in the fast lane. That's what they can't accept. They're thinking, I want to be the fastest person in the medium lane. That's a sad aspiration.
There are days when I love being the fastest person in the slow lane. I like lapping people. Like, it feels great.
But there's loads of people in one. Come on, balance it. Just a mad... Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Dealing with the important things.
So your boyfriend is also a comedian.
He's a brilliant comedian.
Well, let's not go that far.
My boyfriend is brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, and a brilliant comedian.
Has he been on Live at the Apollo?
He's come to
watch me. Because that means he is good if he has not been.
No, he hasn't been on Live at the Apollo. Oh, okay. But he's really brilliant. I met him from being a comedian.
Yeah, that's the same thing happened with my wife, who is also a comedian.
How did you meet Katie?
I met her at a gig the first time I met her.
Yeah.
And I thought she was great.
Yeah.
And then she's quite shy. I remember her. I would really like to want to talk to her afterwards, and I think we talked a little bit. And then I remember sort of standing there and thinking, oh, "That's nice." And then she suddenly disappeared, and then she wasn't. And it was like it was a little bit like the story of Cinderella
or Sliding Doors.
Yeah, it was like Sliding Doors.
She jumped on the tube,
and I'd really like. But this was about 9 months later. But I remember really liking. And I remember she said she might come see my Edinburgh show, and I was really excited that she might was going to come and see my Edinburgh show. And I was sort of looking through the only in hindsight realised like, she didn't come, she had something better to do. And then I went to this, I saw her again, and I kind of just completely. Was head over heels in love with her to the extent that, you know, we had to be together. And, you know, then you're with someone for 7 years, go, oh, why did I get so overexcited about that? I could still be single. Yeah. It'd be great. No.
It's brilliant. I think that's what's nice is being able to trace it back and realising, even though consciously at the time, but there's all these little kind of like asterisks going, oh, I'm noticing you. I'm aware of that person.
Yeah. How did you meet? You met her just at a gig?
We had done a couple of gigs, like a year apart, but we had a very long car drive, which is usually horrible with another comedian. So we were 5 hours from Cuntleth to Leamington.
I remember
having a really nice time in the car, and it was a really kind of sunny day. And then I'd only seen the side of his face for 5 hours.
The thing about him. That side of his face is really nice. The one side of his face, the drive, when that's it's the left hand side, it's really nice. Side. But when he turns around, he's not. He's very attractive, man. It's
beautiful, boy. So that's what happens. Then we got out of the car at Leamington, and I remember like getting my pad out on the table and getting my bag, and I had a wine, and then I looked up at him. And it's the first time I'd seen him dead on.
Yeah.
And then I just realised, oh my God, I'm in love with him. Like it was that, and he remembers me going bright red and thinking, what's she blushing about? I'm thinking, I'm about to tell him I'm in love with him after one car drive.
And did you tell him? Or did you hold it in?
Hold it in.
For how long?
A whole Edinburgh preview.
Wow, did you? And then after the preview?
We had a long drive home.
And then you...
Yeah. Do you know what, on the long drive home, he said to me, have you ever seen the Harry Potter films? And I said, no. And he said, we should have a sleepover. We should do that. Yeah. Sleepover at a boy's house.
It's quite a creepy... If he'd been in the car with me, it would have been a very different outcome.
Tiny Hermione.
Is your favourite house of the whole of the different houses?
Do you know what? I'm not arrogant enough to say Gryffindor.
No,
so I wouldn't. I would say Hufflepuff.
Oh, Slytherin is my favourite.
No, it's not.
It is.
You're just saying that to be edgy.
I don't like. I don't like Harry Potter, so I bought a Slytherin notebook to show how I don't like it.
What a rebel. I'm sure they threw that £10 in the bin.
It was £17.95.
It's been £18 on a notebook.
To show I didn't like Harry Potter after having just been round Harry Potter World. And I drank a butterbeer, then I didn't drink the rest of it because it wasn't very nice. So that showed J.K. Rowling. I just left it on the side. Bet she's furious.
Can we use all of this in our Christmas film, Doors? Because I feel there should be a character who doesn't have to go to Harry Potter World because they missed a train.
Yes.
And they save £50.
But my wife really likes Harry Potter, and your boyfriend really likes Harry Potter.
Uh-oh.
That's who should be together.
And
that's what's gone
wrong
there. They're both sitting in the darkness there. Anything could be going on.
My boyfriend was really laughing at your thing about Hermione hands. Like, too much. Too much.
I'm happy to give it a go. I'm happy to branch out.
I'm not happy with this.
No, it wouldn't be... It wouldn't technically be cheating, because it's a fantasy... It's only like if he's... Do you count him masturbating himself as being cheating on you, if he's thinking about something different?
Okay, this is a real...
Than you.
This is a real... Yeah, it's a very difficult conundrum. But I'm just imagining me coming home, putting the key in the door, opening this could be in the Doors film.
Yeah.
There's a door here. Yes. If I couldn't find my keys, yeah. I missed it, and I come yeah. in, you're just both having biscuits.
Because I'd make him come really quickly.
Okay, so you've come. So if I find my keys, I open the door, him masturbating alone. Hey, I'll go to the kitchen. Or me coming, you're there.
Yeah.
With your hands on his penis, going, no, it's okay, it was basically a wank.
But to make it clear, because I'm pretending to be Hermione, I would be completely covered in a sheet. So it would just be so that he, because John would be, if he was me, and he looked up, and me caught eyes, and I'm like, I mean, Bo, I'd stop, and he would go, well, that's not the experience I was hoping for. But if all he can see is his own, if he looks down, he sees his own penis and exactly Hermione's hand.
Okay, so the reason I feel bad now is that my boyfriend has come along tonight because he wanted to come and watch and support.
Yeah.
And now what he's been subjected to is you acting out a masturbation fantasy.
Yeah. Are you saying that I've committed some kind of sex crime here? But I thought...
No. But no, I am. Right? I know exactly what my boyfriend is thinking right now, and it is, I hope my mum doesn't listen to this.
It's unlikely. Though I might just send her the clip of this bit. Let me know if you're interested, though. I'm pointing over. I don't know if you are over there. Let me know if you're interested. Just imagine I'm just... You have to imagine it. It's 50 quid a throw. That's what we're going
four
for.
More notebooks for you.
This notebook's very close to an end. I am going to probably either... I might try and sell this on eBay.
Oh, yeah?
To try and raise funds. Okay. If it makes less than £17.95, yes. I'm going to be really upset.
I bet you get less than you paid for it.
It's possible. What I should have done was got everyone who'd been on the show to sign their page. Didn't think of that. Because it's got all the Edinburgh Fringe ones in there. There'd be hundreds of different, it'd be lots of different. And one of them would be Stephen Fry and Steve Coogan. That'd be worth some money,
really,
wouldn't it?
Good.
Him signing a thing. I know his email address, Steve Coogan, yeah.
I listened while I gave it to you.
I could give it out now. I bet. I think that would be a betrayal of trust.
You'd be up at the Leveson Inquiry. There'd be a whole separate one.
You are a vegan person who does not eat any animal products or animal things create, like if
I don't know why you're laughing at this very serious topic
I thought something much ruder than this. If a bee deposited some honey on something, you wouldn't eat the honey because that's come out of a bee.
Oh no, so bees and honey is one of the question marks for vegans.
Is it? Okay.
So you have vegans who eat honey. Because we're a fun gang, and we have distinctions for things. So my rule with honey, I'm a very laid-back vegan. Some vegans will say I'm nowhere near strict enough. My rule with honey is I don't buy things intentionally that have got honey in them.
Right.
And I don't buy honey itself.
So things that just honey spilt onto.
No, like flapjacks and breakfast cereals.
Like in a supermarket, there's a high shelf with honey on it, and underneath there are some croissants, and then someone's knocked over the honey. I'm not saying you've done it. But someone has knocked over the honey, and the honey's dripped on. You'd eat those croissants because you know why?
Because they've
not?
Got butter in them.
Yeah, and if a cow had died on near those croissants and been cooked, and that just fell onto the croissant.
I was in Norway 2 weeks ago, and they said to me on the way, they said, "Oh, Norway's very difficult to be vegan vegetarian." Yeah. And I said, "Okay," they said, "but there's one vegetarian restaurant." So I went there. It's in Stavanger. It's a vegetarian restaurant. In it, I ordered a vegetarian salad, and it came with a beef burger on it. And that's how difficult it is.
You can't be too strict with these things. Your life goes. But what I was going to... I think being a vegan... I used to be vegetarian.
Yeah.
Then I kind of thought...
Did you? Do you feel... How does it feel now when you eat meat? Does it still go through your mind? Did you completely forget?
No. Now, if I get meat, I will eat all of the meat.
Yeah.
Because I sort of feel the thing has given its life and its root to not eat it.
Yeah.
I generally got to a point where I thought, I don't care about this enough to put people through the hassle. I think I slightly enjoyed putting people through the hassle, going, I'm vegetarian, so you have to cook something different from me because I'm special. I did care about it as well, but I think I thought to myself, it's not. I don't believe in this enough to make that difficult for people. And it was like in the time when it was a bit more difficult. I also just thought I'd like to eat meat again. I also thought I'm not saving any animals' lives by doing this.
Oh, so because, I think the opposite.
Well, because it's not like if I don't eat that meat that the farmer goes, oh, we didn't sell. All right, off you go, into the wild. No, enjoy your scar. Well done, there wasn't any call for you. Off you go.
It's not
that happens is that cow doesn't ever exist.
Yeah, but it's not that literal. But I tell you what does happen is, so we all vote with our money all the time, turning what we buy. That's actually the biggest way that we vote now because corporations are so important. So every time someone buys a vegetarian substitute, you make that market bigger. Every time you go to a Whole Food shop or someone that has organic meat, every time you create a bigger market, so people start going, actually we can raise the same money by selling less meat, but they're corn fed or they live outside. So actually anytime you make a healthier, more moral choice, it's really important. Although of course logistically that's where people cut you down going, well, if nobody ate cows we wouldn't have any cows.
But that's true.
But that's
because it's not like the farmers are going to go, well, let's have some cows to be nice.
But that's like saying if all human beings lived in prison and were murdered at 13. Yeah, but we're still alive, isn't it?
Well, that would be preferable to never existing, I think. That's the point.
I don't think you've ever been in prison or murdered.
But it'd be nicer. You don't know everything about me. But I think I would prefer, if the choice is never existing and existing, I would prefer to exist in as nice of surroundings as possible.
Really, so if I said a species to you of animal would only ever exist in a zoo, and you think that's better than not existing, do you?
I think it is. I would prefer it if all the animals lived in the wild. And, and I would prefer it if... I don't like the idea of,
of course,
animals being killed, I think. And I didn't really want to get into this. I was going to ask about ham hands. But it's... it's an interesting thing about it. But I just thought I don't care enough. And I think life's about pleasure to the extent of not harming anyone, any other people especially, and certainly not kind of being AA girl and going, I'd go and shoot a monkey just to see if that feels all right or not, because that'd be a fun way to live my life. That's not okay. You know, it's not, I think, so the idea of killing an animal to not do anything with it is bizarre and horrible. Or the, you know, so I think the pleasure that eating meat gives me, I think, is enough for me to personally to miss it.
I think being aware of what you're eating is really important.
Yeah.
I think that's something you've cracked. Australia, Aboriginal people, they hunt for meat, and when they kill something, they sort of say a prayer, like an equivalent of a prayer, thank you to that animal giving up its life. And I feel that that's a really important thing, because obviously so often food is food and you don't remember someone killed this animal, something died. So I think that's quite an important part of it.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that in 20 or 30 years' time, it'll look completely... Just logistically, people won't eat as much meat as they do.
I think people already really realise and think about where their food has come from a lot of the time, or people who have the luxury to think about it. I think people don't want to be unkind.
No.
It's just our bodies were made to consume a huge amount of protein very quickly, and meat is the way of doing that.
It is.
It is.
Plus, it's delicious. But if you had... I'm not going to ask the full question, but as a vegan, if you had a hand, if you'd had a choice, someone had given you a magic choice between having a breast nipple that produced talcum powder, I think this is the right one, or a hand made out of ham, and you'd opted for the hand made out of ham.
Okay, so this is a...
But it's like your own hand.
So it looks like ham, or it's actually from a pig?
Well, it looks like ham, it tastes like ham, but it's grown on your body, and no animal has died to make it.
No, I've grown it.
It's grown out of your own hand, and you can eat it, and it'll grow back again, so you'll still have a ham.
So you're asking, would I eat some of myself?
Would you eat your own ham hand if as a vegan, or would you feel that would make you a bad vegan?
I think I would have an operation to make me look normal again. They probably cost $3,000, just cut around it, make them fingers again.
It would just sprout out again, wouldn't it? It would just sprout out.
So I'm going to be constantly nibbling.
Yeah.
Nibbling around it. Obviously, there wouldn't be a vegan problem because I'm free range.
Yeah.
And I've had a happy life. And I would know how I've been farmed. So there wouldn't be a moralistic thing. I do think I wouldn't eat my own flesh.
Right. Even if it grew back
again. Just as a thing.
Again.
I know I'm weird.
Well, it's just interesting, though, because, you know, if just in case that ever happens, it's good that vegans have thought about how they would cope with that. Because I think some of them wouldn't. Michael Legg wouldn't eat honey roasted peanuts. Would you eat honey roasted peanuts?
I have eaten honey roasted peanuts, yeah. Michael Legg's my inspiration. He's much stricter than I am.
He's a dick.
He's not a dick. I love Michael Legg. I love him. Don't say it. I love Michael Legg. I spend so much of my life thinking, what would Michael Legg think of me if I said yes to this and then turning things down? And it's really helped me.
He's all right. It was good when he was in that Bollins and Nerin podcast he used to do. That was good. So, we've been going on for it. It's been very good fun talking with you.
Thanks. That's not the end of a date when someone doesn't want to see you again. So, this has been fun. You've got my book.
If my wife ends up going off with your boyfriend, I'll have a second date with you.
I haven't heard either of them laugh for ages. I feel like we lost them.
I think we maybe got on our own again, but never mind. You've done Celebrity Squares. Has that been on yet, your Celebrity Squares?
Oh, mine was the first one.
Oh, was it? I haven't seen it.
They
brought Celebrity Squares back.
Okay.
Though officially, I think they should be calling it Squares.
Okay. Yes. So... Everyone did that program. I think this is open. It's because they paid very well. And usually for a panel show or something, you get about £1,000, which is a lot of money. That's probably 3 gigs or 4 gigs all put into one, and you use up material or you write and you prep a lot for it. Celebrity Squares is not that. It's more money, and you just sit in a square and someone asks you some basic quiz questions and you either know it or you don't. And all of us thought, yeah, let's take the money, until it came out and now we think maybe we shouldn't have been as greedy. Maybe just do some more gigs.
I don't know, but in a way, sometimes... I mean, the thing with Celebrity Squares, it's quite high profile, but sometimes...
But it's high profile to people who don't want to see you, who watch ITV.
Yeah. Sometimes I've done ones, I think I've talked about it, I did one called Best Man Speech, which... Have you seen it? Nobody's seen it. I haven't seen it.
Best Man Speech?
I haven't seen it. It's like it was on, I can't even remember, ITV4 or something like that. It was like a show where people, I thought it sounded like a really good idea, and I wanted to do it in spite of the money, which was really good.
At least we're honest about before, that, because you can't lie.
But it was stupid amount of money for like 3 or 4 days work. It was, the idea was that, you know, a comedian would come in and help someone write their best man speech, which often
is a nice idea.
Lots of people kind of, that's what I thought it was going to be. Lots of people email you all the time and go, I'm writing a best man speech, what should I do? And I would usually reply and give them a joke, but also just say, just talk about your friend in a nice way and try not to be too rude about them. But I thought it sounded like, but then it was loads of sort of stupid stunts. So the guy I did, he had to pretend he had 2 broken arms, which sounds like the thing that serial killer did to get women in the back of his van. So I think that's where they got the idea from it from. But then they couldn't do that bit because, you know, he's just... Well, actually, his friend's getting married. It's not even him. So, you know, that could be the way he finds his girlfriend. It was sort of standing outside a pub, and then he had to ask people to help him answer his phone.
Oh.
To give him confidence.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things. And then I think we went to an old folks home where he had to tell some jokes to some old folks, but it was a little bit like, look at all the crazy old people, they're not going to get what's going on. Yeah. And so it's a bit like, oh no. And on the first day it had been all right, and Dave Gorman had been asked to do it as well, and I texted, said, yeah Dave, it's all right, it's don't worry, it's fine, it's good. And then the second day I kind of went, oh, it's not really though, but Dave Gorman had agreed to do it by then, so it was too late to save Dave Gorman. But yeah, we did. It was, but nobody saw it apart from that man. Did you enjoy it?
Not really. No.
No. Okay.
But your intentions were good.
I love the way he cheered when he, hey, I saw that. Well, I didn't. It wasn't terrible, but I did not enjoy it. I want to make it clear, it was bad. It filled 45 minutes of your life that you could have spent doing something worse. You could have you could have wanked yourself off pretending you were Hermione.
I knew that the sister-in-law, the person you were getting married.
Oh, you knew the sister-in-law, the person he was getting married. So literally, like people from the wedding watched it. That was the viewership. So for them, My career's wiped. But even that guy, he's forgiven me 10 years on. He's gone, oh, okay, oh, he's got Steve Coogan on. I'll go and see him, see if he's got any better. But thank you. Well, thanks for watching. But he's literally the only person I've seen it. So it kind of felt
and
like
but also, you do it for good intentions. And also, when I was kind of starting as a comic, I would look at the decisions that people had made. And everyone has got at least one thing, like, yeah, and it turned out to be shit. Or, yeah, the wrong thing. Everyone's got one. And then you learn from that lesson and you become more selective, or you realise, oh, okay, if I'm following my live journey, I don't have to kind of.
But was Celebrity Squares really that? Because it's just a throwaway bit of TV. It doesn't really matter.
I get very upset with negativity on the internet. And I think some people are really, really good at going, who cares? I don't know these people. And there is. There's a kind of thing, someone sending you a horrible tweet to you is like someone shouting out of a car. Like, it's not really personal. They don't know you. It's just an idiot. And they might be very young or very drunk. And I think sometimes they don't know how upset you are. But I don't like it. And it really upsets me. And people really didn't like Celebrity Squares. But Michael Legg loved it.
Did he?
So it's come see, come sir.
So I go back to what I said before about Michael Legg.
And I got a free pen.
You got a free pen.
It writes really beautifully.
And how does it?
Yeah.
That's nice.
It does make a difference.
It's nice when they give you a present. They don't. Most of them don't do that.
I love a present.
Did they give you a present, or was it just a pen you got given to write your notes?
A pen and a notepad with my name engraved.
You just stole the pen and the notepad off the.
No. They were gifts. I love it when you get into a dressing room and there's presents in there.
Well, it doesn't happen very often. You're obviously doing very well. It's a level that I ever get every time. Every now and again, but this is my career. I dip into that level where I see how the proper comedians live. And you kind of go, fuck yeah. Like when I did Dave's One Night Stand, where I wasn't the main one, I was Al Murray's friend.
Yeah.
So I got to be in his one. So I was doing 15-minute routine. They gave like a mini iPod, one of those iPod shuffle things. That was up at the present.
That's amazing.
Go, fuck, I would have done the gig for that. That's amazing.
It's amazing.
And now there's fruit in the dressing room and stuff. Something, you know.
Oh, it's lovely.
And then most places you go and this guy... There's a pack of crisps.
But I still get that with like free crisps.
Yeah, so do I. Unfortunately, that's the right. Even when I'm on a diet, if there's free food,
absolutely.
I go back to being like So if there's like celebrations or something.
Oh
there.
Yeah. So even while being a vegan, and it must confuse people backstage because my boyfriend is just a vegetarian, not a vegan. I empty whatever they've got in terms of celebrations into my bag. So they must come in and go, vegan, my ass. She's eaten 50 chocolates.
Cool. Well, have you ever seen a ghost? I bet you have.
Why?
Because I just reckon you've seen a ghost.
I've never seen a ghost. I've really wanted to see one. I read a book when I was about 12, which was about how all of these levels of existence are going at the same time, and a ghost is actually someone living on their level, in their dimension. So they're just walking across a field, but you see them walking across the room.
Why do they keep going...
Because it was a wobbly field. So, I really, really want to. I think we all create a narrative or a construct of how the world should exist. And for some people, that's aliens and ghosts, and it's a really fun world to inhabit. And other people, it's God and it's saints and it's exciting and it's fun. But I've never seen a ghost. No, I've seen loads of spiders.
Yeah.
And if I was a ghost, that is exactly what I would look like.
You'd come back
really,
as a spider.
That would scare you so much more than a...
Well, if I was a ghost, I'd come back as an exact representation of myself made out of spiders, that once you'd seen me, they'd all go... and then attack you. That's what I'd do. If you could do anything, why not do that?
I'd love that if that's how you came back to visit your mum.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, am I okay in the afterlife? That I could still see her and feel things.
You get to come and go, oh, hello, it's me, Richard Herring. Be better, that'd be fucking cool.
Really good.
That's why most of the ghosts are pathetic. You've got this power to come back.
None of them are made of spiders.
They aren't. That'd be a good thing too. And have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
No. But I did go up with a guy who was 6'7".
Yeah.
And he had big feet.
He did. Let's leave it there, and let's say that with conviction, we'll put a big laugh on the end.
No, it'll be one person going, leave that on.
But I tell you, the asparagus wee thing, amazing. It's changed my life. This video will change your life if you watch that. I'm going to do I'm going to do one more. It's been fun, though. I reckon we could carry it. It's one of the ones that I sort of just feel... Like, sometimes, honestly, you get to this stage... I mean, people are feeling it a bit. But you get to this stage, and you just think, oh, it's gone on way too long. It's boring. But this one hasn't got to that. People, but also, usually, if you push on through, it gets really good again.
It gets good again. But I think that's people saying, now can we go? You've got your big laugh.
They're allowed to leave whenever they want. Oh no! Now they've realised they're going.
They do studies on attention span.
Yeah,
and I do think over an hour, that's it. I need my own time again. Please but now, toilet time.
We talked about the serious bit too early. We could do the serious bit now, seriously about panel shows and stuff.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, well, like without you know, it was a serious conversation, like a grown-up conversation two grown-ups would have. but Steve Coogan's at home now.
Back to home.
He is a look at home by now.
No way. It's a slow train this time of day.
There's a novel.
He'll be Three Bridges.
He's got... the place...
Just past Hayward's Heath.
The place Steve Coogan lives has a novel about it.
I've seen Steve Coogan's house. I didn't say this when he was here. I went to university in Sussex and lived around the corner from him. And this is when he was still drinking and doing drugs. Used to go to the strip clubs a lot. But you didn't hear it from me.
There's a slight problem with that. Well, if we're telling Steve Coogan stories now, he's allowed his privacy to live his disgusting life.
Hey, so this is what I did. So you know Hacked Off, this group? I got asked 2 weeks ago if I would perform for Hugh Grant's birthday.
Oh.
They said, so this is organised by Hacked Off. Hacked Off every year. Hugh Grant, it's his birthday, and they have that as their yearly celebration. And it was as a trick, because he's not a feminist. So they thought they'd book a feminist comedian as a fun trick to see how he handled it and make him put on a No More Page 3 T-shirt. Ha, 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 ha.
Oh, no.
And when he put on the No More Page 3 T-shirt, he asked, oh, have you got a wet one?
What a shame. Because when I did, the one celebrity gig I did was, which I have discussed, I apologise for repeating stories, but it was for Theo Fennell, which is this big jewellery store, and then Elton John, every year Elton John, who's their main customer, they have a big celebrity party, and they're in the store where earrings cost, this is again 10 years ago, £100,000 for two diamond earrings, whatever, and more than that. So they get all their celebrity top clients to come to see this, have a big dinner, and then they have an outrageous piece of entertainment. So they'd had Puppetry of the Penis 1 year, and then one of his minions had seen Talking Cock, the show, and going, oh, this is a brilliant show. But then they made me come and do like 5 minutes of it to over pudding to all these celebrities. And I wasn't even doing stand-up at the time, you know, in that way, so I wasn't used to doing those kind of gigs, and it didn't really work.
No good comedy has ever happened where someone else has been eating pudding.
No.
And you said, surprise, I'm going to talk to you about cots.
But out of every... Posh Spice was there just looking at me like, all the way through. Elton John started talking very early.
She was just hungry for pudding.
He might be. But Hugh Grant was the only person who laughed to begin with. He was laughing, it was really nice. And so I quite liked Hugh Grant, because I thought, but it's because it's all about cocks, so that's what he was felt safe, didn't he, in his his sexist world.
I'm sure he's a really, really lovely person. No. It's just an odd booking to get, like, ha, 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 as a prank before we get a woman with opinions.
Yeah, but it's sort of...
He's not going to know what's hit him.
It's sort of similar, but it's like the Wolf of Wall Street. Have you seen this film,
no,
The Wolf
I haven't.
Of Wall Street?
I didn't want to see it. I seen Gone Girl. Have you seen Gone Girl?
Have I seen Gone Girl? No, I haven't. I've got to that stage where I have to ask, have I seen that?
You should go together. Go together. It's so thrilling.
Okay. My wife's read the book. Every time we see the trailer for it, my wife says, I've read the book, I didn't like it. And then I say...
I didn't like the book, but the film is better.
And then I say, what happened? And did he kill or didn't she? Didn't he? And every time she tells me, and every time I forget what she said.
That's what's
so
good.
Even though I've heard three times what happens in that film, I can't remember.
It's too complicated.
That's the great thing about being 47 years old. Seriously, I'm just watching BoJack Horseman for the second time in about 3 months, and I can't remember remember anything from the first time I saw it.
So you're saying this really flippantly, but if you've seen the film Iris, you'll know that this is a very early stage of something. we might now all look back and go, he did try and tell us. his mind was disintegrating. And we were like, ha, ha, ha.
But in The Wolf of Wall Street, which I wouldn't say is a particularly feminist film.
No.
Even that, you know, it could be, because it could be going, look at these load of pricks, and then the women could have some, you know, but it, even right through to at the end when he's talking, there are a few women in the room, he's still talking about, you're going back to your girlfriends, you're doing this, he's all doing that, and then one woman goes, you gave me $25,000 to help my kid go to school, I love you, Wolf of Wall Street, you are the best. It's pathetic.
A professional actor?
Yeah. That's a very good impression.
Really
of
good.
Well, they have the thing, they have entertainment where they kind of throw a dwarf at a dartboard and they're kind of discussing whether he'll die and they don't care. And they have a thing where they've done well and they go to... We've got Tracy from the Counts and she's agreed to shave off all her hair for $10,000. So it's awful.
But the thing that's awful is...
But it's like our gigs that win. It's like these gigs. It's like rich people paying to...
No, but the real banker lives people. That's what's awful is you're going, oh, isn't it awful, that horrible horror film that actually is based on reality. The real people live their
lives that way.
It's
real, but these people get to that powerful position and then... So both in both your story of you being sent someone as a joke and my story is being, me being there as like a... It's like a medieval jester. Oh, he's going to come and do something outrageous. Oh, but the Queen of Elton John doesn't like it, so none of us are going to enjoy it now. So it's about the humiliation. It's about paying someone to kind of mildly humiliate them for your own entertainment. It's a bit horrible, isn't it? I'm glad we got paid.
I don't think anyone feels sorry for us. We got a story and we got paid.
If you do too many celebrity squares, though, you'll end up having that kind of money and then you'll be behaving
like that.
My dream
is to be all of the squares.
Imagine.
All nine, whoever they come to, back to Pasco.
It's all very interesting. So that was the serious bit. We talked seriously.
Yeah, we did talk seriously.
About feminism. If I have to come down one side... Which is it when you like the feminism? Is that feminist or sexist? Which is that... They're so similar, it's difficult to know. I'd like to see myself as a sort of sexist feminist.
You stuck up for me on Twitter. I was saying, John, on the way here, so you stuck up for me when a man had said that there should be more women on panel shows and then said that I was part of the problem of why there aren't women on panel shows because when I'm on them, I was rude. And you stuck up for me and you said...
He was a dick, that guy.
But you pointed out very well. You said you've come so far around of not being sexist that you're now sexist again.
Yeah. When he sort of decided, he said, oh, it's ridiculous. There's one woman on the show and then he's criticised your material. And it's like, well, you said... So you want women on, but you want to then police their material, which is true. And then it's just, it's like he was trying to be so right on. Yeah. That he kind of lost himself in his own...
Our right to be there is to be as bad as any of the guys.
And it was good, that bit about spraying on the toilet seat. Anyway, so fuck off. Yes, people don't know what we're talking about. Go look through my Twitter feed if you're that bothered. Go back 4 months to look at that. Have all the... Because it was... With those panel shows, what gets me... I really like Would I Lie to You. I think it's a really great format. But there's no... Absolutely no reason on earth why that shouldn't be 50-50 men and women. In fact, women are fucking liars.
Yeah.
So there should be... loads of them on there. But B, it should be... That would make it much better if it's men, like men and women, because there's many different people, different types of people, but like that would be... there's no reason.
I
it's not
it's
competitive.
It's really hard, because actually, if you're one of those people who is a producer... People really do believe that no one will watch your programme unless there's famous people on it. So you'd always much rather have a TV presenter of either gender than somebody that people haven't heard of. And it is difficult, because actually parlour games, anyone could do them. Most panel shows, anyone would be good, edited down, riffing, being witty occasionally. It's not rocket science, but they think people tune in for a certain person that they like, so
they have some odd choice. I mean, nearly everyone's good on it, because even you get someone they have two comedians and two celebrities right on that show, like two celebrity people and the regular guys who are all good but are all
really
men
good.
So they've got a very good relationship, but it's a shame they're all men because they don't need to be. They can't help it, they are.
That's what I'm saying.
I reckon David Mitchell you could turn into a woman pretty easily.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, then it would be, then if that's... They can still have... If they just chopped off his cock... He doesn't probably even use it anymore.
Women aren't just men with chopped off cocks.
Just chop off.
That's not what we are.
Fashion it into some kind of...
We're not cockless men. We're a whole different thing.
It would look... It's not a perfect world, but it's a step in the right direction. I'm trying to help.
Women and eunuchs on panel
shows. I'm trying to help. I'm going to go to the producer of Would I Like You, point out about the lying women thing. They'll go, oh, yeah, good point. Let's have all women on. And then they go, no, hold on, because then everyone will know they're all definitely lying because they're all women. That's probably the reason. Because men never lie. That's the and that's the other drawback with it. I'm like Dapper Laughs.
Have you read Lee Kern's thing that he wrote about Dapper Laughs?
Yes, I have.
Isn't it brilliant?
It's so brilliant.
What he pointed out so well is that people argue that it's snobbery when it's not, it's ideology, and that people do have a responsibility. Sorry if neither of those names mean anything to you, but yeah, it's really brilliant.
They don't really know Dapper Laughs as well. I like the fact that the headline of it is, you have created an almanac for rapists. I just like, that's the headline. Go to Chortle and there's
or a... Huffington Post, yeah.
You've created, Dapper Laughs has created an almanac for rapists. I just thought it's an almanac. To be honest, it's like the idea that rapists go, I must get my almanac. I think most rapists would go to some kind of Rapopedia or I don't think I must find an album. I must find a 19th century version of how to do the thing I want to. I'm not going to come into the modern world. I'm going to get an almanac. That's my favourite thing about that.
Is it?
But the fact that it's
I don't
such
think you really got the point of it. I'm going
to say that. I've got distracted by every time
the
I say
title.
It. I enjoyed reading the article. Every time, still there on the front page. Yeah, you've created an almanac for rapists. Does this predict what will happen to the rapist in the future? Is that what it is? The coming year for the rapist? I think this is brilliant stuff. if I can't do it, I can't do it anywhere. There's someone who laughed in a very weird way at the back there, like a kind of elf would laugh, like that makes me think. Now, I've been quite tired,
yeah.
Which I'm overtired, yeah. Which has led to this abomination at the end.
Has this become an episode of Twin Peaks?
I think a little elf has appeared at the back. It's working. He doesn't even know he's on his own. Everyone else has gone home. He's just sitting here still talking alone. Maybe we should go home. Fucking hell. It's been very nice talking with you.
I've really liked coming here. Thank you.
Good luck with you and all the young comedians. I don't care if you do replace me. I'll just carry on. I can carry on doing this. It doesn't matter that I'm not.
You have a brilliant career, and I always find it odd when you are. I don't know if it's self-deprecating or if you genuinely sometimes think. But I mean, everyone respects you. Everyone would love to be where you are.
I know. I'm brilliant. In a way. In a sort of lying to yourself way, I am. I'm very like a woman. I'm very happy about my feminine side. The thing you want, I think, as a comedian, I think what if you're a proper comedian is the autonomy to do what you want to do. And if you can do that on Celebrity Squares, then that's good. But if you can do that on TV, that's an amazing thing to do.
But no one has it on TV. You have it because people come to a gig because they want to see you. Yeah. That's the only autonomy you have.
I think Stuart Lee genuinely has the proper autonomy.
Who's that guy?
I don't know. No one watches it, but it's apparently a really good show. But he don't know. He's battled very hard to get to a point where he has complete control of what he's doing on TV. Yeah. And yeah, that is.
And also, I think as well, in every generation, there are very few spots for that in terms of television. But in terms of live circuit, you just want to be some people's favourite comedian,
yeah.
And then that's a huge achievement.
Yeah. Am I your favourite comedian? I'm not even. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Sarah Pascoe. Fantastic. You have been listening to Richard Herring's That's the Square Theatre Podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Sarah Pascoe. This music is by Pest. Thanks to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide, all the staff at the Leicester Square Theatre Podcast Arena, which is the Leicester Square Theatre, and Chris Evans, not that one, nor any of the other ones, and his team, his Welsh team of all Welsh misfits. It was produced by Ben Walker. It's a fuzz. Go fasterstripe.com and Sky Potato Production. Thanks for listening to the podcast. There are lots of ways to pay me back. The main one is just tell your friends about this podcast and let them come and listen to it if you think they will enjoy it. You can also go to gofasterstripe.com and buy a DVD or a badge. Gofasterstripe.com/badges. There is a sale on at the moment, gofasterstripe.com/sale. Check out some of the stuff there. Loads of bargains to be had. Or you can come see me on tour, richtherring.com/gigs. We'll get you to all my tour dates. Or you can come and see the show here at the Leicester Square Theatre if it's still running when you're listening to this. Go to my website and there'll be a link to the Leicester Square Theatre website. Or just Google Leicester Square Theatre and you'll get straight here. Buy a ticket. The people who come here have a wonderful time. It feels like there's something else you could do to help us, but I can't think what it is now. So why don't you just go away and do something less boring instead? Why don't you?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.